Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
After the apocalypse, a pandemic survival story. Season 4, episode 17. Close.
How much further are we going tonight?
Brittany asked. She was carrying the baby in a sling on the front. It was hot. Her face was red with the effort of hiking, and her hair stuck in sweaty clumps to her forehead.
We should at least be able to make it up to the road tonight, the old man responded. Then we can get up early and push through to the campus tomorrow. It can't be more than a couple miles. Another hour tops and we'll be there. He could tell the kids were tired. He was pushing them, but they needed to keep going. He was in a hurry. Now that he thought he might have a lead on the virus, he wanted to get back to the campus so he could take his research to the next step. As long as they were out on the trail in gang country, there was danger. He couldn't afford to lose them now. He was in the middle group with Brittany, Petey, and the baby. With his injured arm, he wouldn't be much good with a weapon. And if he was honest with himself, he wanted to stay close to Brittany and the baby. The baby was the prize. The baby was the key to beating this plague, or at least that's what he hung his hope on, and he wasn't letting them out of his sight. Willie was out on point position, some distance ahead, with Bill to give them early warning if they came across any trouble on the trail. Warren and Zane trailed behind and protected the rear. The best outcome would be to avoid any interactions and any trouble, especially with a baby in tow. He had done what he could to help the group move quickly and safely. Now they just had to keep moving. The old man smelled traces of recent fire in the air. Where there was fire, there were usually people. And in the apocalypse, the only kind of company was unwanted company. Harmonious neighbors no longer stopped over for a cup of sugar or friendly chat. Everyone in this chaos was a potential threat. The old man tensed and unconsciously pushed the pace even faster. It was getting dark. Petey slapped a mosquito on his sweat-streaked neck and cursed. Dusk began to transition into darkness. The woods came alive with a nocturnal cacophony. Bullfrogs croaked a raucous, masculine chorus, and peeping tree frogs cried out in a falsetto harmony. In the clearings, silhouetted against a brilliant field of emerging stars, bats fluttered in leathery dives, hunting for flying insects. The natural world was buzzing, flying and screeching with late summer lust, unperturbed by the passing group or the downfall of man. The old man knew something was wrong as Willie suddenly appeared, rushing back down the trail towards them with Bill. Something was wrong. He could see it immediately in her face.
"There's a gang coming down the trail,"
she said, trying to keep her voice low, despite clearly being out of breath. "How many?" the old man asked.
"Half a dozen at least."
"Should we go back to the lake?"
Petey asked. He hadn't wanted to leave the safety of the lake house to begin with. The old man gave him a look that said, "Hold on, let's not overreact." He turned to Willie and asked, "Are they patrolling or traveling or searching for someone? What did it look like they were doing?"
"They were hiking up the trail towards the camp. I heard them coming because they were talking and laughing and making a lot of noise,"
she responded.
"It didn't sound like they were worried about being overheard."
"If they're headed to the old camp, we can just hide until they pass and keep moving," the old man said. "Let's get Zane and Warren, and we'll move off the trail into the brush and let them pass. It'll be okay."
"Christ, we're going to get covered with ticks and jiggers,"
Petey whined. "Better than getting all of us killed," the old man admonished. They moved back up the trail until they ran into Zane and Warren coming up from behind. There was a quick conversation about the situation and the plan. The group split into two and moved off either side of the trail into the brush, where they hunkered down in the dying glow of sunlight behind bushes and logs, out of sight to wait for the gang to pass. Soon enough, they heard young men talking in the way that young men do, profanity, bravado, boisterous insults and laughs, as they trooped noisily up the trail. This group had no fear of being discovered. Apparently, they considered this their territory, and they felt safe. The old man was lying in the dirt of a hollow, peering through the tangle with Bill, Petey, Brittany, and the baby concealed by his side. He counted six young men. They walked in a group side by side. Most of them were wearing packs, and some had long guns slung over their shoulders. It was hard to see a lot of detail in the dusk. And that's when the baby started crying. A gurgling inhale and a long, tremulous wail. Maybe it was hunger or discomfort. It didn't matter. The old man ducked down before he could be seen and glared at Brittany. She pulled the child's face into her bosom, desperately clutching the baby close, trying to quiet and comfort at the same time. "Shh, shh," she whispered softly and gave the old man a scared look. One of the young men on the trail stopped, cocked an ear, and turned to look in their direction. With a natural ambient noise of nature and their own talking, they might have missed the small sound.
"Did you hear something?"
he asked his comrades.
"No, probably just a fox kid crying or a catbird. Could be anything out here,"
another replied, but they all stopped and looked around. The one at the front unslung his gun.
"Shut up for a second,"
he ordered and turned his head to listen. The woods quieted for a second or two in reaction to the men on the trail speaking. The frogs and insects took a few moments to resume their songs and settle back into their normal rattle and hum. The leader of the group was trying to read the ebb and flow of the background noise to tease out evidence from the changing soundscape. The old man felt the fear of being hunted yet again in the apocalypse. If they were discovered now, it wouldn't go well. People would die. Maybe he should just grab the baby and make a run for it. He slid over to where Brittany was clutching the fussy baby, making sure to stay out of the gang's line of sight. He reached out a hand towards the child. Brittany recoiled, horrified, protecting, and pulled away from his reach.
He stopped and smiled a tense, reassuring smile, as if to say, "It's okay." Brittany held the baby close, but let the old man continue his approach, watching him suspiciously. The old man carefully held his hand to the infant's mouth and offered his little finger. The baby opened its mouth and accepted the offering. It began to suckle the old man's finger and quieted down. Brittany looked at the old man with a combination of fear and respect.
"Old dad trick," he mouthed to her.
Meanwhile, the troop of young men on the trail was getting restless as her leader listened intently, trying to read the natural hum of the forest.
"It's getting dark. I'm getting eaten alive by mosquitoes. Let's get to the camp already,"
they said like a Greek chorus.
"All right, let's go."
The leader relented, and they resumed their march. The old man watched them disappear into the distance, but waited another full 10 minutes to make sure. Then he hissed, "Let's go." The old man's group gathered to take inventory before setting out again. Brittany changed and fed the baby, just to be sure, and they resumed their march up to the road. The afterglow of the sun was almost completely gone now as they climbed the trail up out of the valley. The old man had hoped to camp on the road for the night, and it looked like they would just make it before night fell completely. That was where they were confronted with the next obstacle. A vehicle was parked on the road right where the trail emerged. It looked like this gang had found an old van that they could use to move around. A working vehicle was a novelty at this point in the apocalypse. They hadn't seen many for the past few months. Most of the gas was gone, and vehicles were dead or wrecked, hunched like discarded metal beasts, crumbling to dust on sides of roads. The group withdrew down the trail and discussed their options in hushed whispers. Now, what were they going to do? Should they try to go back? No, that would be dangerous. The gang was behind them at the camp. Should they bushwhack through the forest to avoid this vehicle? No, that would be too dangerous in the dark. It was a tangled wood, cut with neck-breaking ravines and sucking swamps. Should they try to attack and overpower whoever was with the van? No, their strategy was to avoid engagement. And, besides, they didn't know what they were up against. For all they knew, this could be a trap. The van might even be abandoned. It took a lot of discussion and argument to get to a decision. They were all exhausted. They couldn't stay where they were. In the end, they decided the safest thing would be to sneak by the van in the dark, to run the gauntlet, as Zane put it. The weather seemed to be in their favor. It was cloudy, and there were intermittent wind gusts that shook the treetops. The barometric pressure felt like it was falling, portents of a storm rising, and a storm in August usually meant a thunderstorm. That would help. The old man tasked Zane and Willie to go observe the vehicle until the time and conditions were favorable to sneak by. Zane returned after a few minutes and reported that it looked like just one beat-up van was parked hard up against the trailhead. They'd need to squeeze around it, cross to the far side of the road, and proceed from there. Willie would go first with Bill and see if she was noticed.
They could always run into the brush, or, in the worst case, the rest of the group could come to her aid if something happened. They would watch Willie's progress. If the coast was clear, she would signal, making a hoot owl call, and the rest of them would follow. The old man would stay close to the kids and the baby. It was a risky plan, but it was the best option. If Willie got jumped, he'd run with the kids and the baby and find another way. He couldn't lose them. No baby meant no cure, and he wasn't going to let the plague win. They all watched and held their breath as Willie slowly crouched forward around the parked van and across the road. Although it had not yet started to rain, heat lightning painted the sky over the mountains behind her. She was briefly illuminated, hair wild, skin shining like some feral she-beast caught out in the open. Next, the old man, Petey, and Brittany, with the baby swaddled and clutched close to her chest, crept out of the trailhead to the side of the van. Then the van seemed to shift on its springs. The old man at first thought it was the wind pushing against it. But then the overhead light went on, and the driver's door, on the other side of the van from where they crouched, swung open with a protesting creak of rusted hinges. They hugged the ground and tried to get as small as possible. The old man prepared to spring at whoever came around the van. But no one came. There was a sound of gravel being crunched under boots as someone stepped out into the road and left the door open. Then there was a sound of a zipper, an audible sigh, and a stream of urine splashed the pavement. The old man could smell the acrid tang of it. Whoever it was spit loudly, finished what they were doing, and zipped up. The boots crunched from the driver's door along the side and around the back of the van towards them. Once more, the old man got ready to fight. The boots stopped at the back of the van. The owner of the boots looked down into the darkness of the trail. Maybe he had heard them. Maybe the lightning had woken him, and he decided to pee before the rain came. The old man would never find out, because the man turned. The boots crunched. He walked around the van, got back in, and shut the door. The van rocked again, and the dome light went out. The old man counted slowly to 1,000, then moved with his charges slowly, silently around the van, across the road, and into the stormy night. Once they were clear of the van, they decided to keep moving through the night back to campus. Bill knew the way, and the storm would give them cover. It took all night, but as the sun began to warm up the eastern horizon, they ran into pickets of Max campus security and were duly escorted back to the school. The old man and Paul were walking together along a campus path. Bill, the dog, was trotting beside them, sniffing at the grass and occasionally marking something that caught his interest, like a particular bush or an old bench.
"Sounds like you had quite the adventure," Paul said in a sarcastic tone to let his father know that he did not approve of him going off alone into the unknown.
"Was it worth it?"
"Yeah, it was," the old man replied, ignoring the implied criticism. "I think I may have a good lead, but I need equipment to test it out. I also need to get that data from the general."
You'll be heading off to the bunker to get help from the general, then?
As soon as I get the samples prepared and packed and do some preliminary testing, yeah, the old man confirmed. How about you? Any progress on your magic future machine? Paul stifled a laugh.
Actually, yes. I've gotten several potential stable solutions, and I have your suggestions to thank for that.
The old man sensed a but was coming, so he vocalized it for Paul. But? Paul shook his head.
But the best, most stable solution with the highest probability of propagation success looks like a damn religion. I'm not going to save the future by creating a theocracy.
The old man chewed on this for a moment and said, Hold on. Religion doesn't have to be evil. There's a universal aspect to it. Every society that man has ever built has had a religious component, especially the successful ones. He looked at Paul seriously.
Don't let your own historical biases cloud your judgment. Figure out if you can use it to your advantage.
You're just full of insights, aren't you?
That's why I get paid the big bucks.
The old man winked. An eagle shrieked and dove towards a pond from a tall dead tree. The old man bent over to give Bill's head a rub. He and Paul walked on in mutual silence, lost in their own thoughts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome, brothers and sisters of the apocalypse, to this celebration, a reading from the book of George. And yea, the Lord God spoke down from heaven to Mad Dog, go forth in your modified truck with the metal plates welded on it and the spikes for defense into the desert. And Mad Dog was confused. He asked the Lord, why the desert? For there is only mutation, hardship, and death. Don't backsass me, said the Lord. I wasn't finished. You must travel for 40 days and 40 nights until you come upon the place known as the Ruins of Las Vegas. There I will provide you with a bride so that you may be blessed. Your children and your children's children will fill the wastelands with their progeny. To which Mad Dog, son of Earl, replied, Damn Skippy, I'm getting me some. Hi, folks. Welcome back. Just have a little fun there. For you, time travelers, it is somewhere around the third week of March, somewhere around the Ides of March, 2024. We just finished episode 17 of season 4, and I am running late with this episode, but thanks to the nature of podcasting and time travel, most of you won't ever know and certainly won't care. Can you believe we are 4 years in? I am so proud of myself for keeping to this schedule. And I have been very busy in my personal life. Isn't it funny how people say things like personal life or real life? I mean, isn't it all personal and real? I guess. Since we last spoke, I successfully ran the Napa Valley Marathon, did pretty well. Even more impressively, I survived 17 wine tasting events in the week that followed. And then, last weekend, we were down in D.C. for my youngest daughter's wedding. And those are my excuses. What are yours? And as you can probably tell from my voice, I managed to catch a cold along the way. But I also managed to read a couple books because I'm that guy. The first one was called The Home Place, Memoirs of a Colored Man's Love Affair with Nature by J. Drew Lanham. Now, my mom gave me this book. She read it for a book club and thought the author's writing style was very similar to mine. And as I read it, I saw the similarities. He has a lot of first-person poetic musings and rich descriptions of the natural world. And I really liked the book. I would recommend it. I would recommend it as a book to lay aside for your summer vacation. So when you're lying in the hammock, you can read The Home Place. I ended up gifting forward this book to one of the people we were in Napa with. Now, the second book I just now finished, and I only finished because I am sick, and I tend to read when I'm sick, is called After 19 Stories of Apocalypse and Dystopia, edited by Ellen Datlow and Terry Windling. Now this, as the title suggests, is another short story compilation. You know I love me some short stories. However, when I opened it up, I realized I had been duped. If you're paying attention, I get duped a lot. Here is the story of my woe, of my dupage. We used to say that a lot back in the 80s and 90s. Dupage. I settled comfortably in my comfy chair, leaned back, cracked open the book with unbridled, yay, almost giddy anticipation. I began to read the introduction because I'm that guy who reads the introductions. And the first sentence says, "Welcome to After, a volume of brand new dystopian and post-apocalyptic tales for young adult readers by some of the very best writers working today." Hold on, young adult? Apparently, I had picked up a short story collection of YA authors. Nowhere in the book description, nowhere on the cover, front, back, or spine, nowhere in the front matter or in the table of contents for that matter, nowhere did the book say young adult until you got to that first sentence of the introduction. I was duped. I was bamboozled. But I was also already in my comfy chair, so I began to read. And you know what? If you hadn't told me, I would never have known these were young adult stories. Which brings us to a bunch of questions like, what defines dystopian and what defines young adult? Is it that these stories use less complex vocabulary and simpler prose? Yeah, maybe, but is that a young adult thing? I mean, Hemingway would like to have a word with you. The only thing I really noticed was that most of the characters in the stories were told from the point of view of a younger person, a child, or more often a teenager. And that makes perfect sense, because how much more dystopian can you get than being a teenager in today's world? How perfect a metaphor is it to have characters who, when they start to become adults, they also become unthinking, bloodthirsty beasts and zombies. Seems pretty on point to me. Lots of rebellion against authority themes in there. And there were a couple of stories where it smelled a little bit too much like The Hunger Games for my taste, but there were also some fantastic stories in there. I would recommend it. And with that, I will usher you towards the exit. Please support the show any way you can. All of the ways you can do that are on my website at oldmanapocalypse.com. Don't forget, we are accepting right now short stories. to edit and read into audio for the season break. Don't be shy. Don't be afraid to submit something. We'll coach you through it. And that gives us 888 words. Keep a wary eye on any young adults that might be skulking about the bunker. And as always, keep surviving.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.